Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, The Wellness Trap, and the new Emotional Eating, Chronic Dieting, Binge Eating, and Body Image Workbook, which are all available wherever you get your books or at ChristyHarrison.com/books. That's ChristyHarrison.com/books. And by the way, on this show, we avoid diet culture details like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised. Hey there, welcome back to Food Psych. This episode is a cross-post from my other podcast, Rethinking Wellness, that I think you'll really enjoy. It deals with themes of disordered eating and recovery from diet and wellness culture, and my guest has a lot of great insight to offer. Check out the show notes for their bio and all their links, and I can't wait to share the conversation with you in just a moment. Intuitive Eating Fundamentals, the online course I created to help you make peace with food, is now available as an evergreen, self-paced course with lifetime access. It teaches you how to recognize and reject diet culture, take pleasure in food and stop fighting your desires, tune back into your body's signals of hunger and fullness, end the restrict binge or restrict rebound cycle, navigate emotional eating and learn new coping skills, and most importantly, I think, avoid turning intuitive eating into a sneaky diet. Sign up now for instant access to hundreds of hours of supportive content, including 13 modules on the principles of intuitive eating, deep dives into how to handle common issues that come up when you're trying to make peace with food, special meditations, journal exercises, and more. Get all the details and sign up at ChristyHarrison.com/course or click the link in the show notes. If you like this podcast, I think you'll love my newest book, The Emotional Eating, Chronic Dieting, Binge Eating, and Body Image Workbook. I co-authored it with therapists Judith Matz and Amy Pershing, longtime leaders in the field of diet culture recovery, binge eating disorder, and trauma-informed care, who are also multi-time fan favorite guests on this podcast. We joined forces to create a workbook for clinicians and general readers alike that we hope will help you break free from the diet binge or restrict rebound cycle, recognize sneaky diets disguised as wellness plans, better understand the role food plays in your life and in managing emotions, unlearn harmful messages about what and when you're quote-unquote supposed to eat, dispel myths about weight, health, and wellness, and lots more. If any of that sounds interesting, you can learn more and buy the book at ChristyHarrison.com/workbook or click the link in the show notes. And now, without any further ado, here's the interview. Sarah Jane Garcia, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk with you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
You are a pharmacist who got really into wellness culture at one point and eventually started to question it and find your way out. And you have such an interesting journey that I'm excited to talk with you about. But first, I'd love to hear just a bit about your history with diet and wellness culture before all of that. Like, how was your relationship with food and your body growing up? And what made you want to go into pharmacy in the first place?
Well, this is such a convoluted tale, but I'll do my best to sort of summarize. So growing up, I didn't have restrictions really on food. It was really not anything that was tough for me to navigate. I grew up very privileged as well. I'm in a thin body. I was spared from any comments from anybody about, you know, needing to lose weight or anything like that. But from a young age, I do remember tying my worth to my looks and my body size and my appearance. Like, people would comment on my looks. And even though I was like part of the A class at school or on the A hockey team, I grew up in South Africa. Even though I was able to achieve these accomplishments, it seemed that my worth became very tied to my looks and my appearance. I ended up moving to the States. And I was young, teenage years when I moved to the States. And I was, you know, really unhappy at this time. It was a traumatic experience for me to move at that middle of high school kind of age. And I was pretty lonely. I didn't really fit in here, but then I also no longer fit in South Africa. I had pursued modeling for a little bit, not really because I wanted to, but I sort of felt like I was pushed in that direction a little bit. And then I remembered like going to California to this conference and not getting any callbacks after that and feeling like devastated. Like I had, you know, I remember this mentality of like, I'm just too short and like not skinny enough for the industry. And I remembered, you know, letting that go a little bit. I was like, you know, that's not really, it didn't really get into my mentality that much. I didn't hold to that. But I do remember feeling like somewhere along the line, I had that had become absorbed within my thinking of like how I needed to look for being able to pursue a career in modeling. I was happy to give it up though, because I'm actually quite a shy person and I do not really enjoy being in the spotlight. And I was able to really hold on to a little bit of my self-worth still, because I knew that that was a modeling culture thing and it was not like about really me and my worth. But it was the end of this like modeling road for me. And so at that point, I was, you know, again, pretty lonely here in the States. I was navigating new friends groups and I started to somehow just kind of like outsource my thinking. And I tried so hard to fit in that I would just sort of make friends with, you know, anybody and sort of become this chameleon and go with whatever their thoughts and beliefs were about things. I was also told by some, like actually older, someone older in my world, that I should never expect to have friends because like girls weren't like me. Like they'll, you know, think that I got this and I've got that and I'm like privileged or I'm pretty, and that, you know, it would just be too threatening, which was really tough to hear. And I shouldn't have like bought into it, but I did. And so then I sort of took it upon myself to just kind of like dumb myself down, to be honest. Like I just felt like, okay, I'm going to focus on making sure that I like don't come across as all of these things that, you know, people might view me as. So I did what it took to sort of like be liked and to fit in. But yeah, along the way, I just really got into like fitness and looks because that is then what my worth was tied to. So it's just this very difficult place to navigate. So like that was how I felt worthy. But at the same time, I was like trying to fit in and like dumb myself down in these other ways. And then by the time I was like 19, 20, you know, I do very much acknowledge the privilege that I have. And throughout my childhood and adolescence, there were some pretty significant traumatic experiences that I did go through. And what ended up, I just feel like I could describe myself at that age as like a very nice and accommodating, people-pleasing, perfectionistic person, pretty shy and quiet, who like just wanted to be liked, and who tied like most of my worth to that outward appearance. Working out was something that was super important to me. I enjoyed it at that time. And then I started to like, I went to college and I heard about the freshman 15. I had a family member who had said, like, I overheard them talking to another family friend about, oh, it's just puppy fat, like expressing like a little weight gain that I had in my adolescence that, you know, it would eventually like correct itself. And then I remember going to the gym and the first time being offered like supplements and shakes and things that were supposed to sort of help me maintain or attain this like super thin toned body. Oh, one thing I didn't mention too was at this point I had also had other friends or family members make a comment like, oh, you've lost weight, you know, and I was like, but like, I hadn't thought about like my body size before, you know, so I was like, well, you know, what was I before? Like, what did you think of me before, you know? So anyway, back to this gym, I was sort of at this gym and then I remember the trainer had said, he like took one look at me and he's like, oh, you're someone who can just work out for a few days and get the body that you want, aren't you? And it was like, first of all, like, was there something wrong with the current body I had? And then second of all, it was like, all it took would be a few days of solid effort and I would get this like perfect body. And, you know, I did end up getting very, very toned. And then I was like very hooked. I also had, I remember this distinctly, a friend had come to visit me from South Africa. And I remember some of our other friends were like, oh, she's gained, you know, so much weight just from being in the States and their portion sizes that they serve there. And I remembered like looking at a picture of her and I and like us being exactly the same weight. And I was just like, a few other things, like just some other experiences, like with a boyfriend and how he very much tied my worth, I would say, to looks as well. But basically, it just became this upkeep. I received continuous comments of my body. Working out now became something I did to maintain my skinny body. And I started to, at this point, binge and restrict. I'd started diets like Slim Fast or cabbage soup diet or whatever else. And then I would end up severely binging. Everything was tied to my looks. If I broke up in a relationship, it was never about like, well, we just didn't mesh and our personality types were different. It was about like, obviously I wasn't enough. And so I would just go harder into like workouts and fitness. I just never really did like this work around loneliness or people pleasing or that.
There's so much in our culture that pushes that too, right? That's like, you know, if you're lonely or you have a breakup or something's going wrong in your life, like get better looking, you know, like work on your body, right? Like it's, you can fix it all through diet and exercise and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then like you'll show them, right? Like your revenge body or something. So I then went to pharmacy school. The reason why I got into pharmacy school was actually pretty interesting. I had spent some years not quite sure what I wanted to do. I definitely was in kinesiology, was my major for a while at school, and that was like sports science. And, you know, that was because I wanted to know more about fitness and nutrition, felt like I was really good at that. And then due to a few like visa issues with my immigration status, I ended up like putting off my training for a while. And it wasn't actually until somebody had said to me, like, have you looked into becoming a pharmacist? So I was very interested in the medical field. I just knew I didn't want to go to medical school. And it was really just from there that I got interested in pharmacy itself. And I was always, you know, really interested in chemistry and biology in college, did well in those classes. And it just felt like a, I don't know, I guess a logical next step. Yeah. And then at this time, I was in pharmacy school and I ended up getting divorced. So I was married pretty young and I got divorced from a really great guy. But in pharmacy school, I was now dealing with that and this divorce, and I was still binging and restricting like immensely. But what ended up happening at this point was everyone around me was like always so impressed at like how well I was handling things or like my dedication to my workouts, which I'd do like at 9 p.m. at night after studying. And I was just really obsessive and perfectionistic about it. But I would continue to get like compliments for how I looked or how dedicated I was to my workouts. And like that made me feel like clearly I'm doing something right to be getting all this praise, you know, and I always felt this need to live up to it, like not doing it would cause me this identity crisis. At this point in my world, I was just so caught up in binging and restricting. It was just such a struggle. The amount that I could eat, all the things I went through and dealt with and the things I tried, like I couldn't break free from binge eating and the cycle of binging and restricting.
It's such a common cycle. I went through it myself and I know many people listening probably have. And I think it was just so eye-opening and something that I didn't even want to really embrace for a long time. But once I finally understood the way that that restricting begets binging and that overexercise contributes to that as well, right? And that like you're creating this energy deficit in your body that your body is just desperate to fill. And so binging becomes sort of a survival mechanism almost. Like that to me was really eye-opening. I'm curious for you, like how you got help with binge eating, because I know your recovery process was sort of a long and winding one and led you in some directions that were not so great.
Yeah, I think at this point I had gone to see my doctor and I had brought this up. And I remember she was so kind, but I got like 15 minutes with her. And then I remembered seeing in my chart that she had diagnosed me with like chronic fatigue. And I was just like, huh? And then I think also anxiety. And I was like, no, like, it's not that. Like, I'm just like struggle with food. And I remember she had offered some like antidepressants at that time. And I, you know, that was a whole nother thing that I've definitely changed how I feel about this. But back then I definitely had a lot of like, well, you know, like I can't take an antidepressant. Like that's going to say so much about like who I am or like how I struggle. And like, you know, it'll just speak to all these like parts of me that I don't really want to like feel or confront. And I think I did end up trying the antidepressant and it didn't work. And I remembered thinking like, well, it's like a 15-minute appointment with her, you know, and I didn't really have enough follow-up. I sort of managed it myself. And that made me feel like it just didn't feel like really solid care. She was wonderful herself, but I knew that the system was like, it wasn't set up to where I could go in for longer appointments or anything like that. I had also started seeing this myself in pharmacy, where I was a pharmacist myself and started to see patients. And I remembered thinking, like, I'm going to know all of my patients. I'm going to know, like, their stories. I'm going to know their history. I'm going to know how to help them. You know, I'm going to know how, like, every time they come to the pharmacy, I'll know who they are and sort of, like, be, you know, someone that they feel, like, really safe and comfortable around. And then I started working in retail pharmacy, and it was like you would go up and be called to counsel a patient on their new medication, and there would be a line out the door. And I would get like, I'd be like, instead of being able to do all of these things, I'd say, you know, hi, do you have any questions? Because I just couldn't, like, you know, phones are ringing off the hook and we've got people coming through the drive-through and there's doctors on the phone. It just felt like it was just too much to be able to actually invest in that person's health. And so that made me sort of start to feel like the conventional system was not really set up in a way to be able to help me and let alone anybody else. I also saw patients who would come to the pharmacy and actually express like, well, my doctor put me on this med, but like, I really don't know if I need it, and didn't have like this discussion with them around what the need was or what the thought process was about, you know, why they should be starting something. And then another big moment for me was, as a pharmacist, I had tried to research medications that could help with binge eating. And I did find one. It's an ADHD medication and it's like an appetite suppressant, but it is at that time it was off label for binge eating. So I went back to my doctor and I said, could I try this? And she was like, and she trusted me. You know, I'm a pharmacist. I was, you know, very open and honest with her. And she like trusted me, but she still like went back and like had to take 10 minutes to look into it. And then she came back and she was like, okay, yeah, I do see that it's, you know, off label for that. We'll give it a try. And on one hand, I super appreciate that, you know, that she was willing to sort of go with something I was recommending for myself. But at the same time, it was like, but you didn't know that? Like, you didn't know about that treatment? Like, what else is out there that I don't know about or that conventional medicine doesn't know about that could truly help me? And so that was like a very big part of it. And then also feeling like we weren't getting to the root cause together. Like, it was always just like chronic fatigue, anxiety. But like, I was like, what's causing this? Like, how did this even come about?
Right. What's driving me to binge in the first place?
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then at this point, I was at the pharmacy one day and I remembered I was working with a coworker, also a pharmacist, and we were sort of talking a little bit about struggling with food. I remember we had all this candy at the pharmacy and we would both just try so hard to ignore it and like not reach for it. And then I remember she said to me, like, hey, have you ever heard of this elimination diet? And I was like, no. And she said, you know, here's this pharmacist person, right? So she's a pharmacist. She's gone through a science background. And she's like, now, like, I've found something that may be like really promising. Do you want to try it with me? And so we did. We like went on this elimination diet at the same time, you know, because it had promised that your issue is probably just sugar and like an addiction to sugar. And so if you just cut it out, like then you'll stop binging or struggling with food, or at least that's how I interpreted it. At the same time, that same person, she's lovely, you know, like she was also caught up in her own issues, which is also part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this, was because there were so many insightful, educated, smart people that would get caught up in plans or protocols or, you know, lifestyle things that would seem promising, but end up being actually quite harmful. And it's interesting how we get snagged and caught up in that. But she ended up introducing me to this like online wellness guru. And I started listening to his podcast and it just made so much sense to me. Like he would talk about how conventional medicine sort of failed him. He had a chronic illness. He couldn't find the cause. And then he went on this quest to find like the root cause of his issue. And so then that resonated with me. Like, yes, yes, I want to know the root issue. So we like tracked the same way. Like we both had a problem. There was no viable solution from conventional medicine. And then we wanted to look at the root problem, which seemed like the most reasonable thing to do. So then I got really caught up in that world. And I started doing like the detoxes, all these like supplement protocols. And I think the trickiest part of all was that I felt like it actually worked the first time. Like I felt like better and I was like, oh gosh, like this is it. Like I've now figured out like, you know, all these ways to sort of help my issue. And then when it didn't work, like a few months down the road, it was more about that it became like unsustainable. Like I couldn't sustain all these sort of practices that I was supposed to be doing. And when it didn't work, I ended up like believing this rhetoric that it was me not trying hard enough, that I just wasn't doing it entirely, or I had cheated and had like a little bit of sugar during the elimination period, you know, so it was like just basically try harder. The other thing that was really difficult, this is a wild story, but I was on vacation for my wedding in Kauai. And I ended up going into this smoothie bowl, kind of acai bowl place, and getting a smoothie bowl from that place. And there was the wellness guru. Like he was there in line.
Oh my gosh.
And he was getting himself. And so then I was like, he's even walking the walk. Like, look at him. Like he's in this like wellness shop and he's like doing all the things. So he like definitely, you know, it was confirmation that like this was the correct thing, right? Like he was also like he was doing all that. Anyway, I started to really become really into it, and so I went on to become certified as an integrative health practitioner through his like online program. So I took like a course on how to like, you know, correct your body with like rest and sleep and supplements and all of these, and I was like very much into it, sort of ignoring the times when it wasn't sustainable and just making that about me not sort of doing it hard enough.
Rather than that this protocol was maybe exacerbating things for you or was too restrictive or not the right fit for you.
Totally. And I also felt like, you know, once I got into his world, it would lead me to all these other like functional medicine people. And like they would have thousands and thousands of followers. And I'd be like, what is this? Like, this is like, you know, like how they can't all be wrong, you know, like, so there must be something here. How could they all be wrong? And so like one person would need to the left to the next, like sort of down this like algorithm echo chamber world. And it just felt like I just really got snagged and really bought into it all.
Yeah. what was it like to get into that whole community and that sort of like social media, you know, holistic wellness, integrative health kind of space? What sort of things did you start to believe?
Well, so at this point, I wanted to become pregnant. And so I would start to like post to these groups about like, you know, the best way to like get my body ready for pregnancy. And I would get all this information that, you know, sounded plausible, but like looking back on it now was just so unsustainable. Various supplements to take, various like morning routines to do, you know, acupuncture, chiropractic, certain amounts of workouts, eating this, eating that. And it just became like, it was a lot, but I, you know, at that point I was like definitely into all of this and did my best to sort of follow all of these guidelines. I also followed a community of like the elimination diet that I followed had formed this like wellness community for moms who like are pregnant or wanted to get pregnant. So I would follow that content a lot. And I would hear about like all the things you needed to do to like create this healthy baby. And so what ended up happening is now, not only was I still binge eating, but I started to now really stress about the food that I was eating and what I wasn't eating and what I needed to add in to my plans and protocols in order to create like a healthy, happy baby.
Yeah, there's so much pressure on moms to do that. And it's like the language even of creating this healthy baby, right? That it's like up to you. And, you know, it's all about what you put into your body to create this life in this perfect way. It's so insidious.
Yeah, it's insidious. And it then became just so distressing. It became so distressing because I now felt like I knew what needed to be done to have this healthy, happy pregnancy and ultimately a healthy, happy baby. And yet I was still binging and couldn't stop that. And I would email or I'd post in these chats to the group members, like, you know, 5 months pregnant and I'm really discouraged because I really thought I would be doing like clean eating for like full 9 months and like doing all of these things to like help this baby grow. And I remembered getting to a point where I was like, I'm really worried that I'm going to be like ruining her little organs or her, like her immune system, or I'm going to like create a colicky baby because of like the sugar that I have in my body and because of like how much I cannot stop binging. Like, I don't know what to do. And so that was really tough. But a lot of the responses I would get would be like, oh, have you tried this way instead? Or like maybe add in this or like, you know, it just like it didn't feel like they were just not sustainable. Then I ended up giving birth to her and she was this beautiful, healthy little baby girl. And I, in that moment, was like, okay, you know. And then I also was like, oh, but it's because I did all these things correctly. Even though I binged during my pregnancy, I still did like the liver pills and like the choline supplements, or like the right amount of exercise. And so I was like, that's why, like, that's what saved this little one. So I had this little girl, and now it turned into like mommyhood and like how to raise this baby to be like healthy, what to feed her, you know, what to feed her. But at the same time, I also was very concerned about how to prevent her from having any of the eating issues that I had had. So I started to look into like the best approaches for feeding her and like how to feed her, what to feed her. And I got, again, through social media, I found like some baby feeding accounts. And the one account that I did find, I actually really loved and resonated with, but they would show food like sandwiches or like peanut butter and jelly or like, you know, like granola bars. And I'm like, wait, isn't that like ultra processed? Like, how can we be feeding them? So I liked the philosophy around it, but I was like, okay, but I'm just going to do everything, you know, that's clean and organic and like gluten-free or whatever else. And so I kind of went down that road for a little bit. And I remember then getting to this place where she was going to be starting daycare. And I was so worried about the food that they were going to offer at daycare. And I was like, I had then again reached out to this like mama's group and said, how do you all deal with like knowing that your baby's going to go somewhere else for the day and get like food that has toxins and like pesticides and like isn't organic? Like, how do you guys deal with this? I'm so anxious about it. And the turning point for me was when I had come across another post on social media from a different baby feeding account. And this person had posted a picture of a can of organic pineapple and a can of conventional pineapple. And she had said, like, we've got to stop fear-mongering around conventional foods. And what she expressed in that post was like, the downsides of organic foods is that we are, number one, fear-mongering around conventional foods to the point where some families are not even feeding their children fruit because they fear how what it may do to their children's bodies or how unhealthy it may be. So they're not even feeding them fruit and then not feeding them anything at all in its place because they may not have access to the organic version. And then the other part of that was how it's creating this judgment of those who do choose to eat or get conventional foods, that like the rest of us sort of judge that choice. And that can be incredibly harmful, especially when the bottom line is that there's some people that like really cannot eat, like cannot even afford to eat, cannot afford to go to various health food shops and get the kinds of foods that, you know, these wellness gurus and influencers are saying are the end all be all to health. That moment for me, I was struck in that moment. I remember I immediately went and like deleted the post that I had, the question that I had sent to the mom's group. And I felt so guilty. And I was like, you know, I've been contributing to this. Like I've contributed to this fear. Like, and like, how did this happen? And then at the same time, I had compassion for myself. I was like, you know, I also was fear-mongered too. Like I was sort of caught in this trap because of this rhetoric that I had started to follow so closely. And so I really tried to just stay grounded in that. But nevertheless, it led me to now a whole new world where I had then started following Food Science Babe, not Food Babe, Food Science Babe. And I started to see how all of these ideas that I had really thought were super plausible, like toxins and foods, the level of pesticides in foods, organic versus non-organic, could be broken down in a completely different way and completely debunked. And I just was like, oh my goodness. And then she, like that account led to another account. And it was pretty interesting at that point how I had started to now straddle the two worlds and started like learning about this other side a little bit more. At this time, I got pregnant with my second baby. And this became like very tumultuous because I, on one hand, was really trying to loosen the reins on like what I allowed myself to eat. And so when I did, I would still binge eat. So when I was binge eating, I would allow myself to binge eat, but then I would also flip back to like, oh my gosh, like what if that's not the correct information? What if that's not like the correct research, right? Like everyone's doing research on everything. Like how do I know that that's the correct information? And so I would really be worried about am I now harming the second baby? And on top of that, I couldn't stomach the good foods, quote unquote, good foods. I couldn't stomach any of the healthy, you know, all the things that this protocol had had me follow for to create this healthy baby. I could no longer stomach those because I was so nauseous. All I could eat was like cheese on toast, cheesy toast. And so then I was like, I'm ruining this baby. You know, like I'm ruining this baby. I'm sugar ridden and he's getting all of it.
What a horrible feeling to have. It's just so much guilt and so much pain.
Yeah. I then went to my doctor, my OBGYN, She was incredible, so incredible. And she was very, like, I think another turning point for me was that she had started to, she knew that I wanted to like try to approach everything naturally and do all these things. But she was so kind about it. And she was also, she just like, I was able to hold onto my autonomy with her. She never told me what to do. She never pushed for anything, but she would give like very plausible, sound reasons as to maybe why we wouldn't like engage in the certain practice in pregnancy, or maybe why for me in particular, like a home birth wouldn't have been the best thing. Like, and so they were, she's a conventional doctor. And I think she just started to really allow me to like slowly peek back into conventional medicine again, because she also spent like 30 to 45 minutes with me, which was like not typical in that space. And so it really helped me like feel open and safe to sort of explore these other ideas, because that's how we need to feel, right? When we want to open our eyes to other opinions or thoughts or beliefs, like we sort of have to feel in a safe space to do that. Like we don't want to feel shamed because we'll totally shut down.
And to feel like held in empathy too, and have someone give you that space, which, yeah, the fact that she made such time for you and had long appointments and like was able to just show up and answer your questions, I'm sure felt very different than this image that you had and this, you know, the all the experiences you'd had in conventional medicine that sort of led you to this integrative place in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly. And she, you know, she was wonderful. And then at the same time, she really didn't know where to send me for this like food stuff. She could tell me till she was blue in the face that like I'm not ruining my baby. And she just was like, I'll look for resources for you, but I really am not sure where to send you. And like just like that was, you know, she just really didn't know what to do with me. I then ended up having my son, and he was perfectly healthy and even more chill than his sister. And this was after a pregnancy of like severe binging and like no wellnessy products. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like I've been duped. Like wellness culture has totally duped me. This baby is fine. And so at this point, I then got kind of like upset and angry that like somehow I had fallen for this. And then it just took me down this other road of like figuring out how and why this has happened. And I'm super, super grateful. I think I've told you before for your episode on how do smart people fall for wellness culture, because that's been really great to sort of understand how many of us can really get snagged, especially now in like sort of our political climate. Like there's lots of rhetoric around health and wellness and mis and disinformation and what we should be eating and what we shouldn't be eating, all in this backdrop of like there's not enough people who get to eat in the first place. And it's just, it's very convoluted.
What do you feel like eventually helped you address the binge eating and orthorexia then? Like, what other things maybe helped you shift that relationship with food for yourself?
Yeah, I think it was sort of being able to peek back into parts of conventional medicine, and then also being given that like safe space through my doctor. And then I had also seen a nutritionist at that time who was like recommending that I just eat a few more like Kind bars. And I was like, again, like this? Like, are you sure?
You've been listening to a free preview of this episode. To hear the rest and get tons more great bonus content, upgrade to paid by going to rethinkingwellness.substack.com.